From the heartland of America, the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, stories of high strangeness with Linda Moulton Howe, followed by your calls, conversations with Linda. Here's what's happening. Well, this E. coli story in Germany and France now just doesn't go away. They say now that it could have come from seeds sourced in Egypt, according to the European Center for Disease Prevention. A report said that there's still much uncertainty out there, but fenugreek seeds imported in 2009 and 10 might have been implicated in both outbreaks. More than 4,000 people were infected during the German outbreak. 48 died. Investigators trace the source back to a bean sprout farm in Germany, but they're still not sure. Food safety expert Jeff Nelkin with us on the line. Jeff, they really don't know what the heck is going on here, do they?
No, like we mentioned before, this is still under investigation, and, you know, they're trying to put the pieces together. And, you know, the one thing that we are figuring out is even though we take these seeds and we dip them, you know, into solutions to kill bacteria, we don't get 100% kill.
No, we don't. And again, your recommendation, what do people do? It's obvious.
Again, you know, if we're people that are high risk, if you're pregnant, HIV positive, diabetic, stay away from sprouts. Make sure that, you know, the sprouts that you do work with, that you either you cook them or you stay away from them, because if you have a compromised immune system, you don't want to take the chance. And again, make sure that you're dealing with, you know, buying from proper sources. Items are properly refrigerated, and it's certainly at home, it's real important. Wash your hands, keep your pets away from your food, and sanitize those work areas.
What's new with our food safety coach, Jeff?
Just, you know, watching, you know, what's going on right now and waiting to see what else is happening.
One quick question. A friend of mine loves Caesar salad, and he was telling me all the ingredients that he uses, and he uses a coddled egg, which is almost raw, the yolk. Isn't that dangerous?
It may be for some people, because the question is, you know, when you coddle an egg, you know, how much heat is actually exposed. The safest way to work with this type of, you know, if you need an egg that needs to be somewhat undercooked, is to work with a pre-pasteurized egg. And those eggs are available, you know, at the market, you know, in the containers. Those are all pasteurized eggs, and we now even have shelled eggs that are pasteurized. So we strongly recommend always using pasteurized eggs for, you know, items that aren't really thoroughly cooked.
Great, thanks. Jeff Nelkin, food safety coach. The Federal Reserve slashed the fees which banks charge for debit card transactions, but did not cut them as deeply as initially expected, handing a partial victory to Wall Street. Under the new rules, the fee charged for the average debit card transaction of $38 would be capped at around 24 cents. In a moment, Catherine Austin Fitz joins us as we talk about that and what's ahead for the rest of the year in your pocketbook. The nuclear power plant now in Scotland has been forced to close after jellyfish inundated its water filters, clogging the cooling system. They say at no time is there any danger to the public. An Oregon man got a big surprise on a commercial flight from Seattle to Alaska when he was stung by a scorpion while sitting in his plane seat. Ouch! Jeff Ellis said he was trying to sleep on a red-eye Alaska Airlines flight when he felt something in his sleeve and tried to brush it away. He said he felt the crawling again. He looked down, and he saw the scorpion. He said he grabbed it with a napkin, showed it to his girlfriend, but not before it stung him on the elbow. And flights at John F. Kennedy International Airport were delayed shortly Wednesday when about 150 turtles were spotted crossing a runway. The reptiles were trying to get to the other side of the runway to lay eggs on the sandy shores, which borders the airport. We've been talking for some time now about Comet Elenin, a long-period comet discovered by an amateur Russian astronomer back in December of 2010. Many people believe it's part of the Hopi prophecy. Many people believe it's the beginning of end times. Well, let's check in with Richard C. Hoagland, who had a major video conference on this. Richard, first of all, how'd the conference go?
Well, we had mixed bag. We had lots of technical problems. I mean, huge DOS attacks. There's somebody out there that does not want the American people to hear reality on this thing and are spreading fear porn all over the net. But despite that, several thousand people were able to attend, and more are logging on now in the archive. I've got a new updated website for people who were not able to get on to the initial live broadcast, which is www.projectcamelotportal.com. That's www.projectcamelotportal.com. It will take you through the steps to log on, to register, log on, and then you'll be able to watch it for your minimal fee as many times as you want with your password. A lot of people are reporting back that this is the most coherent presentation they have seen on the whole Alanine controversy anywhere. So I would strongly urge people who want to know what the facts are and some informed speculation, because we're not above doing that here, to basically log on and take a look.
Now, when you say something happened out there, did it start okay or from the get-go? Somebody was attacking?
No, we had huge problems during the setup, during the testing earlier in the week with basically DOS attacks. You know what a denial-of-service attack is, where some kind of web bots are basically armadded against you to prevent real people from logging on and seeing the program. The morning of the conference, we had huge problems with denial of service. In fact, we had to actually, Kerry has moved the actual archive site to another server, which has much more robust security, so the people who want to see this can actually log on to see it. And you know, we keep calling it a comet, George. I don't think it's a comet. I mean, the numbers I lay out during the conference show me to an odds of millions to one. This thing is under some kind of intelligent direction, and I know how that sounds.
Oh, no.
I would not make that statement if I couldn't support it with the numbers. And it's also the professionals are saying, oh, it's so dim, no one's even going to see it. Look, if this thing is being directed here by someone for some reason, and we could have a lot of fun discussing potential, you know, scenarios, then as it gets closer to the Earth, August, September, it could erupt into the most spectacular object in the night sky close to the sun inside the orbit of Mercury, because it's going to be closest on September 11th, and just that date alone should raise real eyebrows about the odds of that happening by chance.
Oh, that is a great story. Richard, thanks so much. We'll be in touch with you. Richard C. Hoagland. In a moment, our economic advisor, Catherine Austin Fitz, joins us. She's live in our Los Angeles studio. And we'll be back with her in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. It's hard to believe we are halfway through the year already. How quickly time flies by. And Catherine Austin Fitz has been with us for years as we have talked about our economic trends and tips on just how to get by during what was a mess a few years ago and how we're going to get out of it now. She's in our Los Angeles studios. Catherine Austin Fitz, of course, serving as the managing director then and member of the board of directors of the Wall Street Investment Bank of Dillon Reed. She now heads up Solari.com, and here she is on Coast to Coast. There you are in my studio without me, Catherine.
George, you're east of the Rockies.
Get out of my chair and away from my stuff. You're going through all my papers, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
Yes,
but I am using your browser.
Uh-huh.
I am using your browser.
Browser, going through my notes, everything. Dan, no. Get her out of there now. Hey, it's a great studio, though. Isn't it cozy?
It is. It's very cozy. If you remember last year, I was here in L.A. with you live. I thought I was going to see you. I was so disappointed to hear that you were east of the Rockies.
I'm coming back in L.A. in about a week. But explain. Just look around the studio and explain to everyone who's listening tonight, Catherine, what it looks like to you, to someone who's not in there every day. I want them to know what I do when I'm in Los Angeles.
It's very, you know, it has this very powerful feeling because it's all, you know, all the walls are dark. They're black. And then you have this wonderful mural that's lit up. It's electric, Coast to Coast with George Norrie. And then, of course, the digital clock going 10, 18, 34, 35, and the TVs and the browsers on. And so you feel like really you're in a spaceship. You know,
you do.
It's very, yeah, it's kind of have a high-tech feeling about it, but it feels very powerful.
Now look to your left. What do you see hanging from the ceiling? See that?
I see a speaker.
No, way left.
Way left. Oh, then I see Tom. I see Tom through the...
Don't you see something hanging from the ceiling in the corner there?
Oh, yes. Oh,
what
yes.
Is, and what is that?
What is that? That's
that is my earthquake detector.
Really?
When an earthquake hits. Now, this the building that houses our Los Angeles studio is kind of like, almost like it's on wheels if something happens, right?
Uh-huh.
But that little earthquake detector that I have hanging from the ceiling, it's really not that small, even the slightest rumble, you can see it sway. And the only time it moves is if we have an earthquake in that
okay,
area.
Okay, so while
that's
I'm...
That's my early warning.
While I'm here, if it starts to move, what should we all do, George?
You have to just stay on the air and do your thing. If we had an earthquake, I'm not going to run out screaming and yelling. I'm going to keep doing the show as long as I can. I even told
You're near the New Madrid Fault, so it's a bigger chance you're going to get an earthquake there than here.
I am right. And listen, and look, we're halfway through the year already. What's going on economically on this planet and at home?
You know, George, what I've described for many years, as you know, is something called the slow burn. And what we're watching is a rebalance of the global economy. So huge capital is being shifted out of the first world, which is North America and Europe, and into the emerging markets. And as that happens, we're seeing a slow burn whereby the sort of the insiders engineer the global economy with more and more government money and debt. And as they do that, they're really squeezing sort of most people. So we're seeing in this country, we're seeing incomes falling steadily for most people and expenses going up steadily. And it's really got people in a squeeze. And I think this year it's cutting into people very, very deeply. So you're seeing a lot of pain as the middle class diminishes and loses their resources.
If they had, what have they spent on TARP money and money to their friends? Over $1 trillion, right? Over the last couple of years?
I would say it's over $12 trillion.
$12 trillion.
And in fact, the TARP Inspector General counted it as $27 trillion. Now, there are arguments that they've paid some back. But I would say that simply the bailouts, George, and this is all documented on my blog, at the time of the bailouts, they gave the banks $4 trillion more than it would take to pay off all the home mortgages in the country.
What would have happened, Catherine, had they, instead of giving it away to banks, companies, and bailouts, what would have happened if they had given every American taxpayer $100,000, $200,000, whatever the amount would be divided into what they've spent per taxpayer? What would happen to the economy if they gave it to them in the form of spendable vouchers? You had to buy something in the United States, and you could use it for, you know, the next 3 years. You could buy cars. You could buy clothes. You could buy food. You could do anything you wanted with it. It's your money, but it's only for goods. You can't, you know, take it to Vegas. You can't put it in your bank. What would have happened to the economy?
Here's the problem. The economy would have been in real trouble because we had sold, George, fraudulent paper to financial institutions all around the world and investors all around the world. And the question was, were we going to refinance them out of that bum paper? And so I think if we'd given all of that money to Americans but left that paper outstanding around the world, you still would have had very significant political consequences. I mean, you could have had a war. So part of the problem was we had basically issued an enormous amount of fraudulent paper. And the question was, who was going to get stuck with a hot potato? And if we'd given all the money to everybody in America, there were people all around the world who would have gotten stuck much more than they did with the bailouts.
Have they stopped issuing fraudulent paper?
I don't think so.
Yeah, they're doing it again.
Yeah, we've seen, you know, between 1998 and 2002, we had $4 trillion disappear from the federal government. And then we've seen just in the last couple of weeks as the negotiations over the budget for the military in the Middle East have gotten very tense. We've seen the stories come out about all of the billions of dollars that were flown to Iraq and then disappeared. So we continue to see an enormous amounts of money disappear, whether it's the black budget or corruption. And literally, we've reached a point where the official books are so far divorced from reality that I think part of the problem with the economy is people just don't have confidence in the system. So it's you know, and so the slow burn continues, but we're looking at a managed economy, which is really not good for many people. And as this happens, you see the emerging markets rise. But the tension here, of course, is the baby boomers have saved and saved and saved for years and years and years, putting money in Social Security, money in pension funds. And now the time has come when they start to want that money back.
And there's not much money there to give back.
And a lot of that money has been shifted. And that's why you're seeing such sort of squabbles at the state and local level about pension funds, because that's going to be the next squabble. Is the money really going to be there or not?
In several months, of course, we're going to be hitting the holiday buying season as people get ready for Christmas, Thanksgiving. What's your crystal ball say? Are people going to spend money at the retail shops? They're spending a lot on the internet, but what about the stores?
I think this is going to be, this is not going to be a great Christmas season is my guess. It's going to be, now it's interesting, George, one of the things I would note is we've seen certain parts of the consumer sector that are doing really well. I'm staying for the last 3 months in Silicon Valley. And, you know, the consumer sector for the technology stocks is doing really well because people are buying iPads and sort of the new technology. So there are parts of the consumer market that are doing good, but I think this Christmas is going to be really tense.
So what brings you to California?
Oh, well, I've started a new company in with a partner in Pleasanton, California. So, you know, I'll be telling you more about it, but it's got me in Silicon Valley for 3 months and I'm really enjoying it.
Well, good for you, Catherine. We're going to take some phone calls in a minute with you as well. Lots of people interested in their own destiny financially and everything else. So what's your crystal ball look like for the rest of this year?
I think what we're watching, George, is a real shift in governance. And the Greek debt situation is a perfect example.
Yeah.
We have literally seen sovereign debt emerge as a new control system. And so countries, country by country, are not being controlled by their government. They're being controlled by the creditors. And that's exactly what we've seen in Greece. You see it more and more in this country where the creditors really drive and determine policy. So we're literally watching the engineering of government worldwide, and it's happening through the debt system. And it's a real shift from democracy to the creditors dictating policy and dictating policy that makes money for them as opposed to what's good for the whole. So literally we're watching the disaster capitalism story with literally Greece. We see people over in Greece with shopping lists, and basically they're going to strip the country and privatize the assets. And it's all part of this process of moving from places run by governments to places increasingly run by corporations and private investors.
I don't know. Did you ever see the movie 300, the animated movie of 300 Spartans from Greece fighting off Persians that were invading them?
Well, they're being the Greece is being invaded.
I know. And it looked like that movie today, looking at some of the news clips.
Yeah.
You know, people are rioting. They're upset and everything else. Is this the plot of the elitists, the global elitists, who would love to topple countries and take over everything?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a reengineering of government. So what they're saying is they don't want government run by, or they don't want resources on planet Earth run by sovereign governments. They want them run by corporations. And literally what you're seeing is assets moved out of the government and out of communities and into private hands. It's kind of a privatization. And if anything, it's a subsidy to the corporations. We saw with the announcement of the Greek deal, the stock market up. Well, that's because this is good for corporations because those assets are going to be shifted out of a wide variety of hands and shifted in to make money for corporations. So it's absolutely a centralization of control and a privatization of control. So and one that is accumulating great wealth at the top. And one of the things I would note, you know, it's if you look at capital, if capital's in the hands of many, then it's harder to aggregate it for reinvestment in the corporations and some of the big projects they're doing. But the more you can consolidate capital into a few hands, the more excess capital there is to finance the corporation. So we're really seeing a centralization of capital and investment. And it's, if anything, it's shrinking the economy. If you look at what's happening in Greece, those kinds of things that we saw them happen in Russia in the 90s, they happened in Eastern Europe. Now it's moving into the sort of the typically first world. And it's very destructive to the economies. It really shrinks the total economy and the total wealth. And it's part of why we're in a recession and really feeling the pain is the centralization.
Stay with us. Catherine Austin Fitz, our special guest this hour. We're going to take your phone calls with her next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us with a series of stories of high strangeness. But when we come back with Catherine Austin Fitz in our Los Angeles studios, me back in the cave in St. Louis, we shall take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Catherine, what's happening in the world of internet sales? Are they just booming along?
We are watching something very amazing happen on the internet because, George, so many more people, artists and writers and content creators, can create their own market. They can go direct. And one of the ways I watch this is not just watching the stock market. When you go into Walmart or Target, anywhere, you know, I live in Hardeman County, Tennessee. Every time I go in, the record department is smaller and smaller. And a lot of that is just disintermediation of the big corporations because there's so many people who can market direct. And in some ways, it's very exciting because it's opening up all sorts of opportunities for everyone from entrepreneurs to, again, I keep going back to artists. And of course, now we have these websites that do what's called crowdfunding. Are you familiar with that?
I am not.
Oh, it's very exciting. So you something like Kickstarter, where literally somebody gets on and says, I want to make a documentary about banjos. Does anybody, here's my proposal. Will you gift me the money to do it? And so we're watching a whole new way of content get created. And of course, I think one of the reasons we're experiencing in Washington, the corporations coming in and more efforts to legislate, not just here, but in Europe, for control of the internet. And I think that's because a lot of the big companies are getting disintermediated or the traditional channels. So it's a very creative time, and that's the very good news. On the other side, of course, you're getting deeply invasive kinds of tactics by a variety of people. I'm reading a really marvelous book on how to protect your children from, what can happen to them on Facebook. So there's good and bad to it, but I think it's really... my business is very much communicate and meet people through the internet. And so there's a whole new way of relating to each other, which I think there's a lot of positive things going on. And as I said, we expected the technology stocks to be down this year. And yet the consumer side of technology stocks is doing very well because people, I think, really see these tools as not just part of connecting with other people and so their social life, but a critical part of the creative and business process. So a lot's happening, and I would hate to see it get controlled through Washington. So let's just hope it stays free and the information keeps flowing.
Well, and with tools, if you know how to use them, you can do incredible things with them.
Yeah, and we become more into, I'm a great believer in the intelligence of networks, and I think the more we can communicate and be intelligence together, the more we can transform our situation. I mean, if you look at what's happening in the economy, the centralization is really sort of cutting off the blood and the oxygen. But what we're talking about now on the internet is a kind of decentralization, which is a counterpoint to that and very healthy. And so, just as the pro-centralization team sort of cut off the oxygen, the pro-decentralization team shifts it and does these wild and crazy things. So, there's a lot of health there, and I'm always constantly pleased and amazed with what's going on. So it's one of the really exciting things happening.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to Michael in San Francisco, west of the Rockies. Hey, Michael, thanks for calling.
Hi. Catherine, I'm very concerned about the Dublin IMF meeting, July 6th through the 16th. I'm afraid during that time we'll wake up and find out that the dollar's been devalued almost overnight to a fraction of its current value. Is this a proper concern?
Well, what you're talking about is a radical debasement where you have a fundamental shift in one or more currencies between, it's either between different currencies. It could be between dollar and precious metals is much more likely, I think. I'm a believer in the slow burn, which is the dollars in a long-term fall to be replaced by a new global currency. But I think a radical debasement in this year is probably not in the cards. Could it come eventually? Yes, but I think they prefer the slow managed process. And if you look at the success of the sort of what they wanted to do in the reengineering in Greece. I think they could repeat it in some of the other European countries that have gotten real trouble with their debt. And this kind of process, and we're seeing it now with farmland and sort of the new development game here. But I think the chances of a radical debasement this year are remarkably small. And I would be very careful because there's a lot of effort through the internet and the blogosphere to push different collapse scenarios, many of which I think are unlikely. Our real concern should be the debasement game and the slow burn, and that's the risks that I'm most concerned about.
Catherine, we know China's buying up everything, but how strong are they financially and internally?
Well, China is strong in the sense that you have an extraordinary culture and group of people committed to real development. And you've got, of course, 1.3 billion people. So it's by far the largest country in the world. And, and that's a force. And they have brought in significant investment. We've been significant investors in the Chinese, and their economy is growing and growing strongly. The same thing, George, though, they're fragile in many ways. One is they have tremendous unemployment and risks of unemployment, and that makes China really difficult to manage, and that's number one. Number two, they're short of certain natural resources and water. I think one of the things you're watching globally is the real way the Chinese are being consistently checkmated by us is with the oil prices and keeping the oil prices high.
Sure.
We've seen the oil prices back off, but the reason I think they're headed up again is yet again we're going to checkmate the Chinese. Jim Norman has a wonderful book called The Oil Card, and I think we play the oil card on China all the time. And so whether it's the risk of unemployment and the large population or the need for resources that they don't have, I think China has some real fragile elements. But again, they have an extraordinary and, very hardworking, very ambitious, very intelligent population. And they, their growth is going to continue. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with.
We should be careful, though, to not bite the hand that feeds us, right?
Well, that's the big question. There are people who think that the Chinese are financing us, but I think it's sort of a mutual aid society. We print paper and then they take that paper, and by doing so, they finance the payment, all the government payments to all the counties in America who turn around, go into Walmart and buy Chinese products. So, it's a kind of cycle between the two of us. And I think China is as dependent on us, if not more so, as we are on them. So I kind of think of it as a global taxation system. We print paper, give it to them, and it goes down every year, 5 to 10%. And that's literally a taxation system through the global balance sheet. So they're not just financing us, but they're literally providing a tax subsidy to us. And and that's part of the tension in the relationship. They get very frustrated with having to do that.
Let's go to David, Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, on the wildcard line. David, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you.
Sure.
It's a pleasure talking to you with Catherine. Why, the most important thing the Obama administration can do right now, obviously, is maintain the status of world central currency for the Federal Reserve note. I'm not talking about the gold standard. I'm talking about gold content. Now, you've heard rumors that gold will continue to rise year after year, and there's a specific reason for that. As gold rises, say $15,000, $20,000, even $30,000, it will do the reverse of what it's doing now. It will actually substantiate, support, and reinforce the dollar, therefore keeping it from collapsing. But the important thing is what happens overseas. Hundreds of foreign currencies, which may be trading now on the international dollar exchange for maybe one, two, or three pennies, compared to what the Kuwaiti dollar is doing, the 25,000 dinar note. That's something like $3.44 per note. If by doing this, by causing gold to rise every year, supporting the dollar, and by increasing the value of local regional currencies around the world, do you think that would maintain our status as world central currency and keep other countries, especially China, from who is now a world reserve currency, from actually taking over that status?
Well, I think our our status as the reserve currency of the world is determined by our weaponry and military capability,
not by.
You know, I'm not underestimating the power of precious metal stores and who controls them, but I think the determining factor here is, you know, for 500 years, many centuries, we've been on what I call the central banking warfare model, which is the central banks print money and then the military makes sure everybody takes it. I just described China, you know, basically buying treasuries and them going down in value every year. It's a global taxation system. And we've created a system through the currency to basically tax countries around the world and citizens around the world and provide a subsidy into the empire, which pays for the military that keeps the system going. And so I think one of the most important questions we can ask is, you know, what is the most advanced weaponry now being used in the world, particularly invisible weaponry and space weaponry, and who's got it and how's it impacting the global currency? But I would say the issue, the primary issue here is a military question, not a question of precious metals, although I think he who controls the gold has a very important position on the monopoly board.
It's called the golden rule, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
He who has the gold
rules. Yep.
Let's go next. Mike is in Kansas City, Missouri. You're on with Catherine Austin Fitz. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, good morning there, George and Catherine.
Good morning. Thanks.
I've been listening to these conversations for a long time about the economy and what's happening with the dollar and this and that and so forth. I'm getting up in age. I'll be 69 here in a couple of days. And I've been going over things, and it just seems to me that we haven't learned anything from Prohibition. We stopped the people from having alcohol, and the criminals made the money. Now we're trying to eradicate drugs, and we get all these drug policies. We got the DEA, we got the Coast Guard, we get everybody out trying to stop drugs. Why don't we legalize and tax the drugs? They've done it in Amsterdam. They don't have a high crime rate over there. Why don't we just learn from our own mistakes? I mean,
it's Mike, you're right. You're brilliant about that. It's something I've recommended for years. Plus, at the same time, we should go to a use sales tax instead of the income tax, and all that drug money gets used up, doesn't it, Catherine?
And we're fighting the money they're getting out of us. We're fighting our own money overseas. All these wars, they're being done by drug money. I mean, this you know, we're running around, we're chasing our tail. Why don't we just stand up and say, look, everybody thought everybody was going to become alcoholics. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. It didn't happen. Everybody became under control.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're absolutely right. And Catherine, what do you think?
Well, I think the war on drugs has been very successful. But I don't think the purpose was to. Oh, I think it's been wildly successful, George. I think it's significantly increased central control and significantly increased the profits on the illegal narcotics business.
Well, that's what you mean. All right.
Yes.
I'll agree with that.
So if you're and you know, the reality is that money's running through the stock market. You're trying to switch it over to the municipal bond market.
All that money flows through the big banks, don't want to lose it.
I wrote an article once called Narco Dollars for Beginners where I explained it. Basically, if you launder, you know, two or three kids on a corner can generate $100,000 a year to be run through a franchise restaurant that's trading at a multiple of 15 or, you know, 10 or 15 or 20 times earnings. You know, that's a couple million bucks on the stock.
Yeah.
Just from a bunch of 14-year-old kids.
Let's go out to Maryland and Rockville. Lee's with us, and he's on the air. Hi, Lee.
How's it going?
Good.
I remember when the president of Russia, he was against Gaddafi being kicked out. And then overnight, he comes back and says, oh, he's all for it. In the Bible, it says in Isaiah 24, verse 21, there's high ones that are controlled the kings and the queens of the earth and the presidents. And they said that for some reason it says they're in trouble. And they control the governments, not these debit people.
Well, that's a good point. Why can't we get Gaddafi? Catherine, where the heck is this guy?
You know, George, given the technology that we have, the surveillance technology, the satellite technology, I'm I don't believe we can't get Gaddafi if we really want him. So I'm a real skeptic about that.
It's almost like they want to decimate Libya first, and then they'll go get him.
Well, you know, George, look at what's going on in the Middle East right now. I mean, I assume we're in Libya because we don't want the Chinese in there, okay? But if you step back and say, well, why are the Chinese in there? Well, one of the reasons they're in there is they need oil, and one of the reasons they need oil is because we've poured investment into them that would cause their economy to grow dramatically, so they'd want oil. So, you know, it's kind of, we've met the enemy, and it is us.
Years ago, when rogue nations would go into other nations, there'd be major wars. People would try to stop them. We go into Afghanistan. We go into Iraq, regardless of the reasons. That's a different show altogether. We go into Libya. We go into different regions throughout this planet, and nobody stops us. Why?
Well, I don't think there is anybody. If you look at our military and intelligence capability, how would somebody stop us?
Well, isn't somebody one day going to, won't the Russians one day say, enough is enough, or we're launching nukes? And we'll say, of course, don't do that. We've got them too. But I mean, the point is, at what point do some of these other nations say, enough is enough?
Well, I think, George, what you're watching is no one wants to have a nuclear war. And so you're watching warfare play out in the financial markets, in the economic realm. And so we're watching warfare all the time. I think it's one of the reasons for the high strangeness that we're dealing with. Because war is happening, but it's playing out in the markets, it's playing out in the economy, and a lot of it is covert. So, for example, you know, in 2002, the European Union filed a lawsuit in New York accusing RJR Nabisco and just a whole realm of American players of laundering money for Saddam Hussein's family, the Italian mafia, the Russian mafia, you know, and then whatever the European Union wanted out of the United States, they got, and the lawsuit quietly disappeared from the headlines. So, you know, so the attacks back and forth are not the typical warfare, but they're happening in a much more covert and sort of legal financial mechanism. And that's, I mean, part of the problem that many of the people in business have today is they're trying to trade and build and do real things. You know, they're trying to grow food and distribute it and transport it around the world, mm-hmm. in a financial market that's being used as a place of warfare. So they're trying to hedge an agricultural position because they're growing cotton. But meantime, you know, Goldman Sachs is in there, you know, doing all sorts of manipulation on behalf of the Exchange Stabilization Fund, presumably to engineer warfare with the Chinese. And so, you know, is this a market to trade goods and services, or is it a warfare zone?
Is everything being done on this planet for money and power?
No, I don't think everything is, but I think, unfortunately, we're going through a period where our systems are not stable. A decision has been made. You know, we have new technology. It gives a group of people incredible power. They've decided they're going to radically re-engineer how things are governed and shift things from governments to corporations. And, you know, we're going through a period and capital's being reallocated globally, and it means it's a pretty wild time. So I don't think everybody's doing things for power and money, but we're seeing the old world dying, and the new world is not yet birthing, you know, or it's just birthing. And so it's an insecure time for many, many people because it's radical change.
It is radical indeed. Catherine, have a successful trip on the West Coast. I'm dying to find out what you're doing, so I'm sure you'll tell us at the right time.
Oh, I'll definitely let you know. Thank you so much, George. Have a wonderful evening.
All right, take care. That's Catherine Austin Fitz. She's live in our Los Angeles studios while I'm in the cave in St. Louis. I'll be back in Los Angeles, though, in a little more than a week, so I should be back that way. In a moment, Linda Moulton Howe joins us with a series of stories of high strangeness, plus the final hour will be Conversations with Linda. Thanks again, Catherine, for talking about money.